Okay, good morning, Bereshis Rabbi Krohn. So we are on Kuf Yud Tes Amud Beis. We are at the two dots about five or six lines from the top. So yesterday we started the new Perek and we started with the Mishnah. The Mishnah fundamentally had two cases in it. The first case was if there is a woman who's married, she does not have children, and she has a co-wife also with no children. And the co-wife and the husband go traveling away, and then it comes back to her, and they say that the husband died. So the whole question about whether she can remarry or not, whether she has to check for yibum or not, because we don't know if the co-wife gave birth or not. We don't know if the co-wife got pregnant or not. So that was fundamentally the first case. And the second case was if a woman's mother-in-law was also overseas, and therefore if the mother-in-law was pregnant or gave birth to a boy, that boy might be a Zika to her because it would be her husband's brother. So again, the question is whether you concern yourself with that or not, even if she leaves when she's pregnant, if you concern yourself or not. And we got into the whole discussion about whether the Mishnah follows the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was always the one who would look out for the unlikely scenario, as well as whether you follow the concept of majority based upon facts, majority based upon odds, as opposed to the concept of chazaka. So we went over all that yesterday. So today we're going to continue with by the two dots, which is the first case of the Mishnah. So we said that a woman whose husband and their co-wife went overseas, and then the husband's death was reported. So we say, Lo tinaseh v'losis yabim. She's not allowed to get married, and she's not allowed to go yibim. She's not allowed to get married because if she's a Zika, if there's a Zika, then she's not allowed to marry somebody else. However, if the co-wife was pregnant or had a boy, the Zika would not be there at all, and therefore she would not allow to do Yibum. And if she did Yibum, if she had relations with the brother of the man, then the woman Arnon would be Chayiv Kares, not just the man. So Uli Olam, and so is she forbidden? Is this like a forever thing? We said she's not allowed to get married, she's not allowed to do yibum, is that a forever thing? So basically the question is, and Rashi elaborates on this, the question is, just let her do chalitza and then call it, why are we putting her in this limbo state? Amar Ze'iri, Ze'iri said, La'atzma shlosha chadashim, she's not allowed to get married for 3 months because of herself. And it's a general rule that when a husband and a wife are no longer married, either because of divorce or because of the death of the husband, that the wife is not allowed to remarry for 3 months because potentially she could be pregnant from that husband. Until it's clarified what the situation is, she's not allowed to get married for 3 months. The chaverta tisha, but because of the uncertainty about whether the co-wife is pregnant, she has to wait 9 months. And then after the 9 months, she could do chalitza or get married, regardless of whether or not the co-wife gave birth or not. So based upon that, you have these waiting periods. So bottom line is that according to Ze'iri, she would have to wait 3 months just for herself and 9 months because of the co-wife, because then you would see whether the co-wife gave birth or not. And even if after 9 months the co-wife didn't give birth, then she can go do her own thing. Rabbi Chanina Omer, La'atzma Shlosha, she has to wait 3 months only because of herself. The Chaverta La'olam, but because of uncertainty about her co-wife, she has to wait forever. So unless she knows deliberately whether or not the co-wife gave birth, and this co-wife could be on the other end of the world, and there's no way to know it, she wouldn't be allowed to get married forever until she knew whether she gave birth or not. And so the Gemara goes back to that, what we said in the first case, so let her just do chalitza after 9 months, and then she can get married, because in theory, what's the problem? She did chalitza. Abaye bar Avin, Rabbi Chanina bar Avin, Amar Tarveya, they both say, Gezeira Shema Yevlad ben Kayama. We're worried about that there will be a child. And if there's a child, Venimsa Ta Cruz Lakahuna. So if there was a child born during this period of time, then the Chalitza was an invalid Chalitza. And therefore, what happens? So if someone is, if a woman does Chalitza, then she's no longer eligible to marry a Kohen. That's one of the rules. However, if a child is born, then retroactively that Chalitza was not a Chalitza, was not valid. Chalitza it wouldn't have mattered because there was an offspring of the husband. Chalitza doesn't it's not applicable. It's a null and void. So therefore, you're going to somehow you're going to have to make a public declaration that, guess what? We know this person did Chalitza, but it wasn't really Chalitza, and therefore she's allowed to marry a Kohen. So you're going to have to make this announcement that says she's allowed to make this she's allowed to marry a Kohen. Maria, so what's the big deal? Just let us make this, let us. We're going to not ever let her get married because there's a possibility that we might have to do this announcement situation. Gemara answers, Dilma Ika Dahavi Chal Bechalitza Vohav. We're worried that there are people that will only be there when the Chalitza is done and will not be aware of this announcement that she's no longer a Chalitza. The Chalitza was null and void. V'amrei Kashri Chalitza Lekohen. And they'll come to the conclusion that a chalitza, a woman who did chalitza, is allowed to marry a kohen. So they'll come up with this incorrect assumption. So the Gemara doesn't like this, is going to challenge it. And so now we're going to the Mishnah. Niten li ben medina sayam. So a couple goes overseas, they don't have children, and she comes back. And this Mishnah we just learned last week, right? So, there's a chance we might actually remember it. Nitali ben b'dina sayam. I went overseas and I had a child. For Amra, and she said, Mace b'ni, my husband, my child died. For Acher kach bali, and my child died. And then afterwards, my husband died. Ne'emenes. She's believed. So, what is she basically saying? So, by saying all this, she's acknowledged, she's admitting she had a son. She's admitting that the son died, and she's saying that the husband died. So by doing this, she's basically saying, she's declaring that she is required to be to Yibum or have Zika with the brother of the husband. And the Mishnah there said she's Ne'emenes. So we said, we kind of derived that she could have left out the whole thing and just said, my husband died, and then she wouldn't have had any obligation whatsoever. But because she's able to, she puts all the facts out there, we believe her on all the different points. However, she says, Mace Bali, my husband died, Va'achar Kachbini, and then after that, my son died. So she's basically saying that does not have a Zika with the brother. So even though she's acknowledging that the husband died, she's not believed about this. She's believed that her husband died, but she's not believed about the second aspect, and therefore she still has the Zika with the brother. But we're worried about what she had to say, and therefore we also don't, that maybe she's telling the truth, and we also don't allow her to be together with the Yavam or to do Yibam with the brother. And therefore we make her do Chalitza and not do Yibam. But the question here is, based upon what we just said, Velechish, let's worry about this. That maybe after all this happens, Dilma Asu Eidim V'Amikadamrana, maybe a month later, a couple of witnesses will come back from wherever, and they'll say that, they'll specifically testify that everything that she said was accurate. And therefore, that chalitza that was done wasn't an appropriate chalitza, it was invalid. And therefore, they're going to have to make an announcement that guess what? That Chalitza was null and void. So we have this situation that would be the exact same thing. Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa says that the situation we're talking about here is Begrusha. We're talking about a woman who had been divorced previously and therefore is already not eligible for the Kahuna. So even if that Chalitza is a null and void, she's still not chayev. She still would not be eligible to marry into the kahuna, and therefore there wouldn't be a need for this announcement anyway. Or another answer is Rav Chiya Bereid, Rav Huna Amar, Ba'amra Anivahu Nachbu B'mara. That she says, the woman says that both me and my husband were hiding in a cave when we died, and I am the only one that knows the circumstances of the death, and therefore there is no chance that a witness is going to come and declare this happening, because we were so isolated and alone that this will never happen. So between either of these cases, the Gemara is kind of challenging that. That there's a likelihood that even though the circumstances might seem similar, that you wouldn't ultimately wind up having to do this announcement that the chalitza was not valid. Okay, fine. Next Mishnah. Shtei Yevamos. There are two Yevamos who are wives of two brothers, and they come back from Medina Sayan. They come back from overseas. Zo Omeres Meis Bali. The first one, Sarah says, my husband died. Vizosa Meres Meis Bali. And the second one, Rivka says, my husband died. Zu Asura Bnei Bala Shel Zu. This one, person A, Sarah, is not allowed to get married because of the husband of the second one, because of Rivka's husband. Vizu Asura Bnei Bala Shel Zu. And Rivka is not allowed to get married because of Sarah's husband. So we're talking about the wives of two brothers. So because in each case, the wife is believed to say that the husband died insofar as it applies to her, meaning that she is allowed to be viewed as her husband died, but she can't testify appropriately about that that applies to the other wife, who's the other wife who's married to the brother. So therefore, although each wife is now considered with a dead husband, and we're believed that their husband is dead, we don't believe that the Zika, the brother, as far as they're concerned, is dead, and therefore they're considered as still being connected to that person. So that's not a reliable. So the testimony is only believed in terms of the primary deliverer of the message, but even though practically it applies to the other person equally, we don't believe it as applies to the other person. Lazu Adim, Lazu Ein Adim. So Sarah, in addition to her testimony, has witnesses that say that her husband died. The Lazu Ein Adim, but Rivka has no witnesses that testify that her husband died. Es Sheyeshla Adim, the one that has Adim, the one that has witnesses, is Asura. She is not permitted to marry anybody else. Vesheinla Adim Muteris, but the one who does not have witnesses is permitted to marry. So this seems strange, but if you think about it, it's what this really means, and Rashi elaborates on this. What this means is that the first person, Sarah, she's believed as far as her own testimony about her own husband. And the addition of the witnesses doesn't add anything to her, because we already believe that her husband died as far as her. However, the witnesses about her husband died are actually helping Rivka, because they're believed to say that the Zika of Rivka died. So the person who's married to Sarah, as far as Sarah is concerned, her testimony was enough to declare that her husband died for herself, but it was not enough to declare for Rivka that the Zika died. But the witnesses are able to declare for Rivka that her brother-in-law died. But the one from Rivka's perspective, she only has her own testimony. Her own testimony helps her only. But it does. But there are no witnesses that will free Sarah by saying that the husband of Rivka died. So the one that has witnesses actually helps the other one, is what this basically says. Lazu banim v'lazu ein banim. So one of them has children and one of them does not have children. Es sheyesh la banim muteres. The one that has children is allowed to remarry. V'she'en la'banim asura. The one that does not have children is not allowed to remarry. So why is this? So the one that has children So in this case, what we're talking about is, so Rach, so let's so if you read like notes 30, 31, 32, let's use those. So Rachel has children with her husband Reuven, but Sarah did not have children with her husband Shimon, and both of them testify about their husband's death. So since Rachel is not chayer for Yibam because her husband has children, so it doesn't matter to her whether her husband, whether whether the brother is alive. So she can marry based upon her own testimony because we know that her husband had children because they're her children. The other one, Eshe Asura, because she does not have children, so therefore she is, it's the same as the original case that the testimony of the other co-wife doesn't free her from being bound to the brother who is dead. However, now let's say there are other brothers on the scene. So let's say in addition to the brothers who die, there are two other brothers. Nisyabmu. So let's say these two brothers' wives did Yibam with the other brothers. So you have Sarah and Rivka that were married to Avraham and Yitzchak. Avraham and Yitzchak both died, but then there's also Yaakov and Moshe. So they went and they did Yibam with Yaakov and with Moshe. Umesu and then Yaakov and Moshe also died and did not have children. So Asuros Linase, they're not allowed to marry again, because it goes back to the original problem, right? So the original, so this goes on the first case. So the original, on the first case, there's no children on the scene. They basically revert to the situation where there's this, there each of them has a brother. Each of them has a potential brother whose status is unclear as far as they're concerned. So Sarah, back to our original case, Sarah's original husband, although she testified that he died, that does not help Rivka. And Rivka, although her husband ultimately died, that does not help Sarah. They went off and they married these other two people who were other Yivamim, but they died, and therefore there's still a Zika, and that Zika for those original husbands still exists. Rabbi Elazar Omer, he disagrees. Once we allowed them to marry these other two brothers, they're allowed to marry other people. Because in essence, that once we did this, once we allowed them to remarry, then we believed in essence the testimony of Sarah and Rivka that those two husbands died. And therefore, we take that fact and we say, if we allowed it, that if we believe them enough to say their husbands died, to allow them to marry the other two brothers, once we did that, then basically it's as if the Beis Din has certified that the other two brothers have died. And therefore, for both, according to Rav Elazar, for both of these women, all the potential husbands, all the potential Yevamim, have been certified as being dead. Okay, on to the Gemara. Tana, the Braisa taught, Lazu, Edim, Uvadim. This one has Edim that talk about her husband died, and she has children from her husband. She has both Edim and children. The Lazu, Lo Edim, the Lo Banim. And the second one neither has witnesses or has children. Shtehem Mutaros. Both of them are allowed to get married. So the first one is. Doesn't have to do Yibam because she had children. And their second one doesn't have to do Yibam because there were witnesses about the first one, right? So they both are able to remarry because for the first one, she had children. The second one, there were witnesses about the first one. So they're both allowed to get married. Nisyamu, so this is talking about the last part of our Mishnah. Nisyamu umesu hayivam masur. So if this is where they married Yaakov and they did Yibam with the third and fourth brother, Yaakov and Moshe. Nisyabu asur. So if they did Yibam with the surviving brothers and they died, the first opinion was that they should not be allowed to be married. However, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Hoel Hichuli Yavamim, who's called Adam. Once we allowed them to the Yavamim, they're allowed it to all the people. So what does Rabbi Elazar mean? By Rava asked, my time of the Rabbi Elazar, what is his reason for allowing that? Mishum de Kasavar, Sara Me'idel Chaverta. Is it because, like we learned last week and the week before, this whole concept of we're concerned that that the co-wives are out to get each other, and therefore their testimony about that applies to each other is not believed. So maybe do we say Mishum de Kasavar Sara Me'idel Chaverta? Do we say that Rav Elazar holds we don't worry about it, and therefore we would allow each one to testify as applies to each other? Odilma, is his reasoning Mishum de Higlo Mekakal Nafsha? Because even though she doesn't like her sister-in-law, she's not, or sister-wife, she's not gonna mess herself over just to mess up the other one. So what is his reason? Is it because we believe her, or is it because we think that she's not going to mess herself over just to hurt the other one? Lama nafkamina, what's the difference between these two things? Why, you know, what's the practical difference? So the difference is a case where a man has two wives and goes to the Medina Sayyam with one of them, and then she came back and testifies that he dies. That's the case. So Lansuve Latsara Mikamidida. The difference is whether we let the co-wife who stayed behind marry prior to the one who came back and testified. So again, you have two co-wives. One goes overseas with the husband. One stays back. The one that went overseas came back and said, guess what? He died. So, I amarta tsara me'idel chaverta, if you say the Rav Elazar's reason is that we believe that the tsara can testify about her co-wife and we trust her, af al gav, even though the one that is testifying has not yet gotten remarried, masvina la lasara, we allow the co-wife to marry first based strictly on her testimony. If you say that the reason is that the woman wouldn't mess herself up to mess up her co-wife, insiv, then if the one who testified got married first, minasvin le'gut sarah, we let the co-wife get married first. Ilo insiv, but if she didn't get married, we don't let her co-wife marry. So it's kind of like, in the cartoons, it's like there's two drinks. It's like if she drinks, we know that there's no poison in the drink. So if she went first and she got married, then we know that she must be telling the truth, because otherwise she's really messing herself over. But if she didn't do that, if she didn't go first, then we didn't believe her. So bottom line is that the two views is if we hold the view is that we trust her to talk about the co-wife, then it doesn't matter who gets married first. If the calculation is about whether that the woman wouldn't mess herself up just to mess up the other wife, then if as long as she goes first, you know, then we allow it. If not, not. So with this, we'll conclude, and we'll pick up again next week with Daf Kuf Chaf. Have a wonderful day.